Base Adar, Tuesday the 28th of February, by Yankee Wiesenfeld. Waste not, want not, case studies.
Don't touch this. Okay, we're going to talk again a second load of rubbish. Yeah, just to give you a brief synopsis of what we discussed last week, just to bring it in for those who didn't hear last week. Yeah, we said as follows, that the issa of baltashkis to araisa is to cut down a fruit tree. Los ashkis is eitzo. We learned a Gemara, in which the Gemara said that where one has to do kriya, which is causing a partial baltashkis to a beggar, kriya, rachman al-islam for an ovel, yeah, then we learned midrabonon that it's not allowed to do more than the minimum. Right? Kriya must be the minimum amount, which means you tear the one beggar, the shear that's necessary, and you don't tear... first of all, you don't tear kriya for those people who are not relatives for which one sits shiva, and except the special exceptions for Rabbi Mufak and that sort of thing, God Lador. But apart from that, generally speaking, one's not allowed. It's not pshat that I'll be machmir, or I feel so terrible that Nebuchadnezzar died that I feel I want to do kriya, because it's a chumrah da'osi le'kula. You want to be machmir on yourself to do kriya, but as a result of that, you're causing a baltashkis. Similarly, somebody who is a novel, and he wants to tear every beggar in his cupboard, and he wants to tear the curtains and the towels and the tablecloths in his house, in order that wherever he goes, he sees kriya. That's a chumrah d'osya de kula. The Gemara said it's also likraya alames yosem idai. And we learnt out from that. We learnt out briefly four things. Number one is that baltashkis is not only in food; it applies to everything. It applies to clothing, to buildings, to kalim, whatever it is. Number two, we learnt out that baltashkis is not only when you destroy something completely, but even if you destroy it partly, or you reduce its value, or you reduce its usage, like tearing a beggar just partly. The third thing is that there is a heter likroya, there's a heter to do baltashkis, l'shem mitzvah. We have mitzvahs that we're going to be speaking about today, where it's a mitzvah to do a baltashkis, to do a tashkis, a hashkosa. And the third thing is that we learnt that from there, that where you do it, if you have control over it, and again we'll see that in a minute, then you have to minimize it. And the final thing that we learnt out from the Gemara of Rav Huna, who bought up all the vegetables from the market at the end of the day, was that it's also to be moired, that it's called the baltashkis, to lower a food from human consumption to give it to a behemoth, to make it into animal consumption. So now we're going to try and apply that lemaisa and look at some case studies, look at some cases. As far as I can see, we have three categories. Or before we go into the detail of the specific cases, we've got three categories that we need to look at in baltashkis. We have one baltashkis where the Ribbono Shel Olam said, destroy this thing. The mitzvah is to ruin or to completely destroy something. That is a mitzvah. And there, when the Ribbono Shel Olam said, bring a korban oilo, I take a good animal, which could have been eaten as good meat, and I destroy it completely. I burn it, kolil l'Hashem elokecho, and that is the mitzvah. So there, I can do it with l'shem yichud, I can do it l'shem shemayim, with all the gita kavonas, I don't have to have any guilty conscience about baltashkis, because that is the mitzvah that Ribbono Shel Olam gave me. Similarly, the soya hamishtaleach, I send this goat to the mountain, and I throw it off the edge of the cliff on Yom Kippur, etc. That is the Ribbono Shel Olam's mitzvah, to destroy that goat, and that's not a called baltashkis, that is the mitzvah that Ribbono Shel Olam created that for. Similarly, the same thing with an egel arufo. Similarly, we're coming up to Purim. Anything that belongs to Amalek, right? Amalekim and their wives and their children and their animals and everything. We learn the parsha. We're going to learn the haftarah of Agog, who was Shaul, who was criticized by Shmuel because he didn't destroy everything that related to Amalek. He left some of the animals alive. He wants to bring in kabbalas. Yeah, Amalek. Ribbono Shel Olam says destroy Amalek. Finish. If there is an ir hanidachas, you have to raise it to the ground. You have to burn everything that's in it. And you say, baltashkis, what a waste of a good thing. Maybe we can move all the poor people into the city. Yeah? We say, the mitzvah is, the Ribbono Shel Olam gave it like that. That's the rutz of the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's one type of baltashkis. It's not a baltashkis. It's not an issur of hashkosa. Adarabba. The mitzvah is, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, this is what you do in this particular situation. There's a second type of hashkosa, which is also a mitzvah, but it's sort of bedieved. It's like, you know, unfortunately, because I got into this situation, therefore, for instance, noisar, the korban that's left over beyond the time when you're allowed to eat the korban. The Ribbono Shel Olam would like you to finish off all of it. There should be no noisar. Yeah, because there is a baltashkis involved there. But v'hanoisim emenu, bo'esh tisreifu. But once this month is over, you have to burn the leftovers. And the same thing applies to Truma Tomeo. If Truma becomes Tomei, then you have to burn it. Now, the Rabbi Shimon would prefer that all the Truma is going to be eaten by the Kohen, but Bikdusha of Taharo, yeah, and that there isn't a situation of Truma Tomeo. But once you get into that situation, Bediyevet, then I get into a situation where the mitzvah is to destroy that. And maybe there I do my baltashkis because I'm being mekayim the mitzvah, but maybe with a heavy heart because it could have been avoided. The other situations were unavoidable. The Rabbi Shem said, bring a korban oyla, you have to bring a korban oyla. End of story. There's nothing to feel bad about. Here, there's a second situation, which is a bediyeved, which is there would ideally not be any noisa, there would ideally not be any truma tmeah, but once there is, I have a chiyuv to destroy it. And I have to destroy every little bit that I've got of it. Whatever's left over, I have to get rid of. The third thing, which is our subject for today, is like we spoke about in the case of Kriya. In the case of Kriya on the Beged on a mess, which is that I have a chiyuv to be mashkis something, l'shem mitzvah. I have a chiyuv to carry out a certain amount of destruction, and it is a mitzvah to do so. But there, we're going to find out in Chazal, we're going to find out in Halacha, it's not my campaign, it's not my hobby horse, it is a bit my hobby horse, but the idea that I'm trying to put forward today is that you might think that when it comes to doing this mitzvah, if you do a bit more, you're a machmir. You're doing the mitzvah, a hidden mitzvah, I'm going to do a bit more. And it's really a chumra da'osa l'dei kula, right? Because what you're doing is at the expense of baltashkis. If you're doing more than the minimum, then you have a chiyuv to do a minimum. And we'll see the examples in a minute and it'll come out clearer to everybody. But you do more than the minimum, then you have a problem on the other side that you're causing a baltashchis. And therefore it's not a mitzvah, it's possibly even an aveira. I'll give you the first example. It's a well-known story, and to be honest, the punchline's better in Yiddish. So I'll say it in Yiddish and then I'll translate for those who are not familiar. Yeah, Yankel meets Beryl at the Kelim Mikveh. And Beryl is there and he's toveling a pile of plates. It's a motley collection of mismatched plates. They're different sizes, they're different patterns, some of them have got pieces missing, a number of them are chipped, and they're cracked. It's clearly not his new Shabbos crockery set. And he looks at this pile of plates and he wonders about it. By the way, Agav, just wanted to tell you, I remembered when I was writing this down that the Sasser Rebbe Zecharei Levracha, the Sasser Rebbe here in London, if he ever saw somebody toiveling Kalim, happened to me more than once, toiveling Kalim outside the mikveh there, when he was, and he would walk past, he would always come up to you and say, so Sanitzen Gesinntheit bis in den Zwanzig. You should enjoy those kalim to 120 years. It was such a nice brocha. I got that brocha more than once when he caught me, you know, at the kalim mikveh. It's a nice idea to give somebody a brocha. Nitzes gesintheit. When you're at the kalim mikveh in Golders Green Road and Baruchonis, there you very often meet other people who are toiveling kalim. Gives our brocha favos nisht. That's our gaf. Anyway, so Beryl says to Yankel, he says, what is this pile of plates that you're toiveling here? So Beryl says, these are the plates that I throw at my wife. Right? When we're fighting, when we're in the middle of a row, right, and we're shouting at each other and I'm screaming at her, then I toss plates at her. Yeah? And I ran out of dishes, so I went this morning to a car boot sale and I got all these second-hand dishes cracked and broken, the chweisish was, and I'm toiveling them, l'shem yechukutcha, in order to use them to throw for my wife. So Yanka says, why are you toiveling them? You're not going to eat from them. Yeah? So Beryl says, well, my wife, Ruchale, she's very frum, she's a big machmira, and she doesn't allow me to throw untoivled plates at her. So Yanka says, that's Meshiga. Says, there's not one poistik in the world who's going to hold that these plates need tevila. What do you think you're doing? Yeah? So Beryl says, yeah. It says, this is the punchline in Yiddish, yeah? He says, yo, it says, de bist gerecht, aber was tipp mir nicht verschollen beiß. Which means... okay, it means, translated loosely, yeah? He says, you're right, but I give in to her for the sake of marital harmony, yeah? So, but the Ma'at says, Sipuri Tzadikim, we have to learn from. Let's learn from Beryl. What did Beryl do? He threw at his wife plates that were not fit to be used at the Shabbos table. He bought second-hand plates at the car boot sale, which were broken, which were cracked, right, in order to use those. So if you say that it's a bit to discipline your wife in that way, and I make no comment, then Beryl was doing the right thing by minimizing the amount of the value of the plates or the type of plates that he was using, that he wasn't reducing them from human consumption to throwing consumption.
If you see division,
what? Yeah. If you see that, wish them besinnet zvonzig. Yeah. Okay. Let's have a look at some examples now in halacha. Okay. Rabbi Hul, Dain Hul, when he came to London, gave the first shiur here in Torah Way. He spoke about trumas and masters, about separating trumas and masters. The Federation have a whole campaign on it. It was in the Yonig Shabbos about 3 weeks ago. And everybody knows that when you separate trumas and masters, then you do two things, right? The masters we're not worried about. We deal with masarishan. But we've got two problems. We've got one problem with the truma and the trumas masa, which would normally be given to the kohen. And that we separate just over 1/100th of the fruit. And we throw that away. We wrap it up and throw it away. We destroy it. Normally it's wrapped up and thrown away. And the second thing we do is we're poida on the coin. Either you've got your own coin or it's the Federation coin, the Karen Trumas and Masas. Forget the Masa Sheni for today. Forget the Masa Rishon for today. Let's concentrate on the Truma. The Truma, where does this shear of just over 1/100th? Everybody knows that if I've got an orange, for instance, and I want to eat that, and I don't know whether Trumas and Masas have been separated from it, then I will take just over 1/100th of the edible part of the orange. So if an orange has got 20 slices, then it will be just over 1/5 of one slice, and I wrap it up, and I throw that away. And this is the chelik of the Truma. This is the chelik that would normally have been given to the kohen. But where does the shear of just over 1/100th come from? So, Bizvan HaMikdosh, when a person had tavur, a person had produce that grew in Eretz Yisrael, and he was chayav in trumas hamasros, he separated first. Then this is tevel. I can't eat it until I've done my trumas hamasros. So what did he separate first? First he separated the truma. The kohen came and said, "Have you got any truma for me?" And he had to separate truma. How much did he separate? It's either a 40th or a 50th or a 60th. Let's take a 50th as the average. 2% of the produce went to the kohen. The next guy who knocks on the door is the Levi. And the Levi says, "I want Masa Rishon." Well, he's got 98% left out of 100 bushels of crop, right? A bushels of wheat. He's got 98 left. And the Levi comes along and says, "I would like your Masa." And he says, "Fine, that's 10% of what's left. So I give you 9.8. The Levi goes home, and from that Masa, he has to give Trumas Masa, which is 10% of the Masa that he just got. And there the Torah does give a shear and says it's 10% of what the Levi receives, he gives to the kohen. And that's Trumas Masa. So let's look in total. How much does the kohen end up with? The kohen ends up with, I've got a pie chart here. I don't know if anybody of you can see it, but maybe it'll help you understand. Right, I've got, this is the 100%. 2%, the mauve here is the Truma Gedola that I gave to the kohen. I then gave the orange chelek 10% to the Levi, and the Levi separated 10% of that, which is approximately 1% of the total, to the kohen. Yeah, and he gives that to the kohen. That's Trumas Masa. So you've got the Truma which is taken from the Tevel, and Truma which is taken from the Masa, and together I've got 2 plus 0.98. Yeah, that was 9.8 I gave to the Levi. So I got 2.98. So approximately, Bizman HaMikdosh, the coin would have received 3%. 2% from the from the Balabais, and 1% from the Levi as being the Trumas Masa. Okay? Now that was Bizman HaMikdosh. What was the coin going to do with it? He was going to eat it, B'Kedush of Tahara. Today, even if we would hold that our kohenim yuchosim, and I can give truma to a kohen, and he is a kohen yuchos, he could trace his lineage back to Aaron a kohen. Oh, but one thing he certainly cannot be, and that is he cannot be tohor. He cannot be tohor because we regard ourselves today as tamei mace, and we don't have a porah duma today, and therefore a kohen with the best will of the world in the world cannot be matar himself. Therefore, because he cannot eat truma b'kedusha, I can't give truma to the kohen to eat. So today, if I'm going to be separating my trumas and instead of giving it to the kohen to eat, it's going to be destroyed because I can't eat it myself, nor can the kohen eat it, and therefore I wrap it up and I have to throw it away and destroy it because I've got no other eitzah. Then Chazal said, "Aha! But now, then we're coming to a question of baltashkis." Now we're coming to a question of baltashkis because what I'm giving to the kohen or what I'm separating as truma is going to be thrown away and not eaten. Therefore, I have to try and restrict myself to the very minimum that I can get away with. Bizman Azeh, the minimum, right, or even Bizman HaMikdash, the minimum was not 2%. The Gemara says that there is no shiur for truma. It says, chito achas poiteres esakri. You can have a whole vineyard with millions of grapes, and the and min ha-toiro, he could be yoitza with giving one grape to the kohen. Chito achas, one ear of corn could do an entire field. And therefore, you could have an infinitesimal tiny amount of truma, which you're yoitza, with which you're yoitza. If you give the kohen comes along and says, I can see you've got an entire estate of wheat, you've got tons and tons of wheat, and you give him one ear of corn, I've been yoitza. It's min ha-toira, that's the minimum shear. Bizman ha-mikdash, Chazal recommended, a 40th or a 50th or a 60th, that's the anhoga toiva, that's the midrabanan. But midoraisa, chita achas pateres sakri. Therefore today, we're going to revert back to that, because we're going to throw it away. If we separate now 2%, 1/50th, as truma, then that 50th is going to be thrown away. Why throw away so much truma? Why throw away so much truma? Let's manage with the minimum shia. So therefore, today it looks like this. Today, the truma gedoila is a sliver here. Right? I've written it down as 1,000th. But it could be 1,000,000th. It could easily be 1,000th, right? You have a few bunches of grapes. You could easily have, out of 1,000th. And then you give a half a grape from that, or a quarter of a grape from that. And that's chito achas poteres sakri. So if a Chazal said that Bizman Azeh that we're going to destroy the truma, we revert to the very minimum. So today we have a sliver for truma gedoilo, which means that when the Levi comes along, okay, we separate Maaser Rishon, we're allowed to eat it, but out of the Maaser Rishon we have about 1%, which is approximately 10% for the Maaser Rishon. Therefore 1% of that is Trumas Maaser. There the Torah does give you a shear, it's 10%. And therefore, I end up with a sliver plus 1%. And that's just over 1/100th. So Bizman Azeh, when I'm separating the Truma and the Trumas Maaser to be destroyed, Bizman HaMikdash, it was about 3%. Bizman Azeh, I revert back to the minimum shear in order not to create a Baal Tashchis. If the Kohen's going to eat it, be generous. Give him as much as you like. You want to give him more, gezin to height, because it's going to be eaten, it's not going to be wasted. Bizman Azeh, when I'm going to burn it and I'm going to destroy it, then the halacha will be, and that's what we hold, that you give just over 1/100th. The 10%, the 1%, the 1/100th is the Trumas Maaser, the chelek out of the Maaser Rishon that the Levi would have given to the Kohen, and the other little bit extra is the sliver of Truma, which is the very, very minimum that I can get away with, Bizman Azeh, because I'm going to destroy it. Let's have another practical example. There's a minig to overpour and to overspill the kos b'havdola. Yeah, everybody does that, right? When we pour out the kos b'havdola, one pours the kos until it overflows onto the plate or onto the ground, it even says. Yeah, and that bit which is going to be overspilled is going to waste. So the Gemara, the halacha brings down v'chein haminik, the minik is, yeah, the Ramah brings down v'noegim lishpoich mikos shel yayin al oretz. And why do we do it? Because there's a Gemara in Ervin Daf Samachay which says, Kol bayis shlenishpach bo yayin kamayim, eino bichlal barocha. A house where wine doesn't pour like water is not bichlal barocha. We have to, now is not the place to discuss this, Mama Chazal, you give a whole shir on the subject. But clearly, Chazal learnt from that as simon barocha is going to be, that my kos is overflowing. And the Mishnah Berurah writes down, V'achroinim eskimu, shevashor shemoizik, that at the time when you pour your kos, yishbechenu mole alkol gadoisov, overfill the kos so that it spills over all the sides. He says, V'gamze yesh lemayet v'chele kanishbach. But he says, but be careful, only overspill a little bit, says the Mishnah Berurah, v'shom hefsad mashkim, because that bit's going to go to waste. I'm not going to drink it. So somebody might say, this is a simon brocha. Therefore, if I pour into my kos, and I pour and pour and pour and a lot spills, that's going to be a big simon brocha. And the emes is, it's not a big simon brocha, it's a big Baal Tashchis. The Mishnah Berurah says quite clearly, yesh lemayet b'chelek hanishpach b'shum hefsin mashkin, and the Mogen Avraham says, oba m'at is not called b'zoyin mashkin. The little bit that overflows, that's not called b'zoyin mashkin, and that is And that is a siman brocha. So therefore, when you pour the, according to Mishpura quite clearly, the Magen Avraham as well, they say that when you're overflowing and you want a siman brocha, let the kos overflow. But don't let it overflow a large amount. Don't let it overflow that the plate should be full, because that is a, this is coming back to our theme, which is that where I have a mitzvah, where I have a mitzvah to cause a certain amount of hashkosa, but it's done to the minimum, not to the maximum, because if I do it to the maximum, it's a chumra d'asi leidin kula. I'm doing, you know, I'm trying to get myself a lot of brocha through the simon, but on the other hand, I'm risking bal hashkis. Let's talk about chometz on Erev Pesach. Yeah, there's a mitzvah of tashbisu, of destroying chometz. Yeah, we have a mitzvah de oraisa of tashbisu. Now, there's a machloikas, the Sefer HaChinuch brings down a mitzvah test. There's a machloikas, exactly what is the mitzvah of tashbisu on Pesach, on Erev Pesach. Do I have a mitzvah of tashbisu is simply to ensure that I have no chometz in my house when Pesach comes in, or after Chatzos? Yeah, is the mitzvah there simply to make sure that I don't have? Or do I have a positive mitzvah to actually go out and destroy some chometz? So it's a machloikas, but everybody agrees that clearly whatever you have left over and you're approaching the Zman Issa, you have to burn. So what's the halacha? Mi she'ein lo chometz, this is Shulchan Aruch, Mefurish, Tof Mem Hei, Simon Beis. There's somebody who has no chometz. Would he be mechuyev to go out and to buy some chometz in order to be able to burn it? Or you could say, no, I'm mechayim, according to some Rishonim, I'm already mechayim the mitzvah tashbisu. So, the Mishnah Berurah says that if somebody had given all his chometz to a goy, yeah, he wants to give away all his chometz to a goy before the Zman Issa, Mishnah Berurah says, Shom v'yashir al kolponim kezayis l'kedei l'kayim mitzvah tashbisu l'chula alma. That because I have a mitzvah, according to Rav Rishonim, of actually burning chometz on Erev Pesach, therefore he should leave himself with a kezayis. And the Kaf HaChaim says, yeah, v'yashir al kolponim ezeh pesisim. It says, just leave a few crumbs. Just leave a few pieces. If you're going to make sure, if you're going to give away all your chometz, then you should leave yourself enough just to be mekayim the mitzvah. And it's interesting that Piskei Chuvas brings down that lechoyra, if there is a mitzvah d'oraisa on every adult male to burn chometz on Erev Pesach, then lechoyra one should make sure that every person in the household who is over the age of 13 should burn chometz, should have a kezayis of chometz, the burn. He brings it down in the footnotes. He says, Lechoyah, I'm not sure whether it's the minig olam. I don't think it's the minig olam that every yeshiva bocha or every over bar mitzvah boy has a kezayis of chometz. But he suggests that, Lechoyah, if you say tashbisu as a mitzvah on every person in Klal Yisrael, then Lechoyah, that would be right. But the point that I'm making here again is, the Mishnah Berurah says, how much should you burn? You have to be mekayim a mitzvah burning. That's hashkosa. That's bal tashchis. But the Torah said, tashbisu. You should destroy chometz today. Fine, but only a kezayis. And the Chaf HaChaim says even less than a kezayis, only a number of crumbs. So therefore, those people who come along to these public, burnings of chometz, yeah, where there's a strafas chometz, and they come along with bags, and they come along with boxes, and they've got whole chalas and boxes of cereals and all sorts of things. Yeah, that the lechoyra, there's a shalom bal tashchis, if possible. Obviously, what you've got left over, you have to get rid of. You've got no choice. But if a person can be metamtim, if a person can make the calculations and work it out in such a way that he leaves himself with very little chometz on Erev Pesach, then that's matov manoim. Because it's not a mitzvah to be machmir, to bring lots of chometz and to burn a huge amount of chometz. Because burning a huge amount of chometz is not a chumrah and it's not a hiddur mitzvah. It's hiddur mitzvah, maybe, yes, I'm being mekayim tashbisu in a big way, but I'm also doing a lot of bal tashchis. So therefore, if a person can, the choyra, it seems quite obvious from what the Mishnah Berurah says, or from what Kaf HaChaim says, that if a person can, he should be metamtim and not leave too much over, and just burn what's left. Yes, you have to burn what's left, but don't try and make sure that you don't have too much left. Tashlich and putting out bread for the birds. We've got lots of examples. Yeah, you could be mevatlit, you could give it away to a goy, you could destroy it in other ways. Yeah, but the point is that if you're left with a lot of chometz, then you can't eat it all, right? Then you're left with a situation where one way or another you're going to have to destroy it.
There's no mitzvah to burn.
What? What?
There's no mitzvah to burn your leftovers.
That's what I'm saying. So what would you do with the rest of it?
You
throw it out, you get rid of it, etc., etc. I said better would be leave yourself a kazayas for burning, or leave yourself crumbs for burning, and try and finish off as much of the chometz as possible, that the food should be eaten, the food should be consumed in the best way possible. And we learnt that to give it to animals is a lower level. It's not lechatchila. It's better to give it to the animals than to throw it away. But afal pi ken, we learnt last week that giving it to animals is not the ideal. Yeah. Let's talk about shemen. Okay, let's talk about oil. Let's talk about oil. Yeah, let's talk about oil. Okay. Yeah, there are two types. Some people have a minig. Yeah, people use shemen zayis in order to burn, to use for the candles for Hanukkah. And there are a number of people, it's become quite popular nowadays, that they use shemen zayis on Friday night as well. There are two types of shemen zayis on the market. There is virgin olive oil, which is cold pressed, which means that they take the fruit and they press it, and what comes out from that is pure. It's pure olive oil, and that is food grade, and people can eat that, and you can put that in your salads, and you can use it for cooking and baking and all the other things that people make from it. There is another type of olive oil, which is also pure olive oil, but it's not food grade, it's industrial grade. It's made from something called a pomace, I don't know how you pronounce it, pomace, I don't know, which means that it's the pulp that's left over. After the oil's been pressed, they've squeezed out as much as they can physically by pressing the oil. They can't squeeze any more oil out of it, but they know that within the pulp there is still some more olive oil to be had. So then it gets into hot pressing instead of cold pressing, and they use solvents and they use chemicals which they mix in order to extract the last bit of oil from it. In Hebrew it's called gefes, in English it's pomace. And from that they make olive oil, and that olive oil is produced for industrial purposes, but it's also available for candle lighting. And there are a number of bottles of olive oil that you can actually buy in the kosher shops, which have got a hechsher on them, and they're shemen zayis, but it says on them quite clearly, lemoa bilvad v'loi la'achilo, that they're not fit for human consumption. The reason why they're not fit for human consumption is because of the solvents, because of the chemicals that were mixed in during the process. Some of them have got a mixture of virgin oil together with the solvent squeezed oil, and some don't have any of that at all. It depends on the various grades. So, lichoira, we said that a baltashchis involves taking something which is fit for human consumption and lowering it to something that is unfit for human consumption, or even if it's only fit for animal consumption. We learned that from the Gemara of Rav Huna last week. So therefore, lichoira, it would seem to me, I don't know whether I'm right or wrong, but it would seem to me that if you have the choice of using food-grade olive oil for your candles, or you have a choice of using non-food-grade, unfit-for-human-consumption olive oil for your candles, lichoira, you should use the non-food-grade. And this way, Torah way gives you a way of being mekayim the mitzvah in the best way possible, and it's cheaper as well, so you get a practical tip as well, because the other oil is cheaper. It could be, I was clearing, it could be that on Chanukah, there might be zeichel anes. Ribalt, the nes occurred with pure olive oil, which at the Beis Hamikdash had to be the first press. Kosis lamor. Therefore, maybe zeichel anes, there would be an Indian to use food-grade olive oil, to use high-quality olive oil. But on a Friday night, where the Mishnah says clearly by Mamadikin that all oils are kosher, yeah, all oils are kosher, and even wax is kosher, etc. Therefore, on a Friday night, maybe, there might even be, and again, you'd have to ask your Rav, I'm not passing in Shalas, but lechoya, there could even be a chashash, who knows, of maybe a baltashkis involved in lowering virgin oil, which is fit for food use, which can be eaten, which can be used in cooking, and which can be used for eating purposes, and using that actually to burn for the chometz. To burn for your candles on Friday night. I've got some other subjects to discuss. Time has run out about pouring off the wine during the Seder, and there's also about putting the thing out for the birds. But the point is as follows. The rule that we're trying to say is that even b'mokay mitzvah, where you have a mitzvah to destroy, if you have an option to do the minimum, then rather do the minimum and don't get involved in baltashkis. And then the Rebbein Shalom gives a brocha that anybody who looks after the products that he gives them, the shefa that the Rebbein Shalom gives, he shows respect for, and he doesn't destroy it. The Rebbein Shalom will mashpia toiva to those people more and more.